Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Beautiful day here in London, 24 degrees or thereabouts, that's 75 Fahrenheit. And for the time of year that is October as I record these words, that is very, very unusual. But I'm not going to knock it because it ain't going to last. You know how I like the sunshine at the moment. The sun is beating down on my neck. It's rather lovely, you know, sitting here with a cup of coffee, feeling very chilled about things. Thank you for all of your emails. Please keep those coming. Thank you for the response to the end of the television show. I will be able to tell the full story of how and why that happened at some point. I can't do it right now. But, you know, some of you have suggested things that may or may not be true about it. And I would ask you, you know, not to speculate about it right now, but I will tell you the story. And maybe one of these days somewhere, the TV show might return. You know, I would hope so. But I would hope that if it returns, it returns with the right kind of resources for it and that kind of thing, because it deserves it. So we're back on radio. That is my natural medium, and I will tell you more when I know it. Thank you to Adam, my webmaster, for his ongoing hard work with this show. If you've made a donation to the online show recently, thank you very, very much for doing that. It's very, very kind. The guest on this edition, the return of John Russell, professional psychic, paranormal investigator, guest on some of the biggest shows in the world, and friend of this show over a long time. He's got a new book out. It's a kind of guide to 20 ways to increase your psychic powers. That is, of course, assuming that you have them. And some people don't believe in this kind of thing. Some people email me and say, like your show, but don't want psychics and mediums. So this could be a good point to turn off if that is not your thing. But if you are into those things, and I think there is more to life and the world and everything than meets the eye, if you are into those things, then this is going to be a good show for you. So John Russell, the guest on this edition of The Unexplained. Like I say, thank you very much for keeping in touch with me. It is gratefully appreciated. And, you know, it is a two-way street here. You keep me going. So thank you for all of your responses by email and also your lovely comments on my official Facebook page recently. They do mean a lot. Okay. 20 ways to increase your psychic powers. John Russell, the guest on this edition of The Unexplained. Let's get to him now. John, thank you very much for coming back on my show.
Oh, Howard, it's great to be here. We always have such a good interview. It's always a good time, and always appreciate all the listeners and the feedback, and we're going to have a good time again today.
You have a very nice, and what my webmaster would call, clean website. It's a very nice interface. But I didn't realize all the things that you did, though, because you're down there as a paranormal investigator and a tarot master.
Right, right. Yeah, I earned the degree of Certified Tarot Master. I did that when I was a teenager, when I was living back in West Texas. And there was an organization called Tarot International. And tarot was an acronym. It was a period after each letter. And it was the Associated Readers of Tarot International. So Tarot International. And this organization offered a course in how to read the tarot. And it was really, really an excellent course. It was really, I remember just being astonished at the time, and I still remember it fondly. They had some really unique and different ways that they taught you to read and to use the cards. And then every time that you studied a portion of a test, they would send out a test each time, and you would complete that test, send it back in, and they would grade it and send it back to you with the new material to study. Then you had a test on that. So you went through all these tests to make sure you had this proper understanding of the cards and what they were teaching and how to utilize them properly. And then at the end of the course, you had to send in, I can't remember how many it was either three or five, you had to send in actual readings. You had to write them down. They provided forms, and you had to do readings for people that could be friends, family, strangers, whomever, but you had to write down what cards came up in the reading, what meanings you assigned to those cards, what you told the client, and then the client had to rate the reading as to the accuracy of the reading. And then you sent all those back in, and if everything was copacetic, then you got your degree, Certified Tarot Master, and I aced the course all the way through. So it was really a lot of fun. And that organization, unfortunately, went defunct many, many, many years ago, as so many things do. But I earned that degree and still carry that proudly. Love using the tarot cards.
I know a lot of people who do this. I've known them all my life. And yeah. I've known some, even though I've been very skeptical about it, who've been incredibly accurate. What do you think it is, if anything is, and I've got... As you know, the big quotient of my audience is very skeptical. Some of them don't believe in anything to do with the psychic or anything like that. However, what do you think it is that is guiding the tarot cards? Because you know, one person I knew who did the tarot very well, I thought, he always used to say that, you know, when you pick the cards, you'll always pick the same cards. And you know, he used to tell me that there was almost an order to the tarot. It is not random. What do you say about that?
I believe that the cards do have an inherent power, that they're not just inanimate objects. And so I think that when a person uses the cards, it's kind of like a dance, if you will. There's kind of like this correlation between the person's psychic abilities, the card's inherent abilities, and those two mesh together then to give you this accurate reading. And then, of course, it depends upon the skill of the reader as to how they interpret the cards. One card, which has a specific book interpretation, if you're a good reader, that card could have a jillion different interpretation for a person when it comes up in a reading based upon your intuitive response to that card and what it's trying to convey in the context of that particular reading for that particular person.
You know, we sometimes see in, you know, old westerns, for example, you know, the guys involved in a duel might be involved around the bar table the night before they're going to have a gunfight. And they'll pull cards. And as part of the drama, one of the cards pulled will be like a death card.
The Ace of Spades. The Ace of Spades.
Exactly. I mean, there's a famous... land speed and water speed racing person in the United Kingdom called Donald Campbell. He held both the land speed record and the water speed record. I think he was going for the water speed record when he died in a vessel called Bluebird that was like a super fast water car on Lake Coniston in 1967. Now, there was always a claim that he played the Ace of Spades the night before he died. So this is a very roundabout way of saying, do those things really happen, particularly with the tarot?
They can. There are some instances where the cards will predict certain events, and it's not written in stone. Most of the time when we foresee things in the future, I tell my clients, if there's going to be something negative there, let's figure out a way to avoid it entirely if possible. And if you can't avoid it, let's minimize it. Let's figure out ways around it and figure out ways to continue to live positively and productively once you're past that episode. And likewise, there are things that are positive predictions that you foresee coming for the future. And you want to tell the person how to be in the right place, the right time, doing the right thing to connect with that and to make that a positive event. But yeah, it does happen. And I remember a kind of a funny incident. It was funny to me. It wasn't funny to the ladies at the time. But when I was a teenager and I had started to read professionally, I had quite the growing reputation, and people would drive sometimes 100, 200 miles one way to get a reading with me. And these ladies had come for a reading in person and had driven several hundred miles. And I used the tarot in the reading, and the very first card that came up was the death card. And both women recoiled and gasped. And I said, "What's the matter?" One of the ladies' mother was ill. And that was one of the things that she had come to talk to me about in the reading, was the well-being of her mother. And so when the death card comes up first, rattled out of the box, it scared her to death. And I said, no, this is not your mother's death. You have to understand that in this reading, this card coming up in this particular way, it's simply an indication that there's a passing away of old things in your life, not your mother, but various things in your life that need to be cleared out, and a passing away of old things so that new things can come in. So it's very important that if you're really a skilled reader, a true reader, you don't go by the book definitions, because if you go by the book definitions, somebody unskilled, inexperienced would have said, you know, oh yes, that's the death card. That must mean a death for your mother. But it wasn't that case. So a lot of it depends upon the skill of the reader as well.
Mm. And you don't give it to people with both barrels. If you see something that's not, if you sense something that is not good, then then you don't go there. I can remember, and apologies if I mentioned this the last time we talked, but I went to see when I was a very young man, and always, I mean, right up to today, always doubts and concerns and fears and worries about career. You know, I'm still working decades later, but back then I was maybe 23, very, very worried about life and work. And my sister recommended a London psychic and tarot card reader. Very, very well-known person, charged an awful lot of money for this reading.
Wow.
And she got the cards out and she started, you know, we started picking the cards. And she just looked at them and she said, so many disappointments. Now, I don't think to myself that she should have told me that. But actually, what occurred in the years that followed, largely because of my dealings with the BBC and some not nice experiences with them in the years that followed, there were, in fact, multiple disappointments, and I had to learn to take those on board. But I wonder if it did me any good to have her maybe see those things and tell me. I'm just not convinced that it ever did.
Well, I think that it does have a benefit if the reader then tells you what to do about those disappointments, how to handle those disappointments, how to prepare for them when they come, how to handle it, how to deal with it, how to move beyond it. Is there a way to turn it into a positive? Or at the very least, to explain, say, look, you're going to hit these things, but it doesn't mean you're doing the wrong thing, wrong place, wrong time. It's just normal life, and we all hit these obstacles. We all hit these walls. So it's okay to share those things if you then turn around and say, okay, here's how to deal with those things.
Right. Which, to the best of my recollection, she didn't do. If she'd only said to me, it's going to take you 4 years, but you will come through this amazingly. I think it would have been easier.
Yeah.
Maybe she didn't know. Maybe the cards didn't say that. I don't know. Okay. What's the point of this book? Look, I've got to tell you, and I kind of hinted at it before, and we've said this before, where we've talked anyway. Right. I have listeners to this show who loathe psychics, who cannot bear mediums, psychics, anybody like that, because they personally think it's hooey. And they are disgusted with me, some of them, ashamed of me, some of them, because I do these subjects. And I do these subjects because they're part of the range of subjects that I'm interested in. Right. And, you know, if you can't do the things that you're interested in a show that you are doing, then you ain't got a show as far as I'm concerned. So I will do these topics. However, you've got to know.
Plus, you've had your own experiences, so you know the reality of the realm.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do. And, you know, I personally believe that there is more to everything than we see, because I've had multiple occasions where it's been proved to me. But, you know, this is not about me. That's just my personal feeling. Those other people who email me will probably feel differently about this. However, those people who would say that, is it impossible for you to work for them if any of those people were brought to you? Say somebody was given a reading with you for a Christmas present. They don't believe in it at all. They think you're a fake and a charlatan. You know, they come to you anyway because it's been paid for. Can you read for that?
A lot.
Have you?
Yeah, absolutely I can. Absolutely I can. I've had that experience a lot. And the fact that a person is a skeptic or a disbeliever doesn't impact my ability to read accurately for them. And if they're willing to be open-minded and say, well, what if, maybe, if they're receptive to what the other side gives them through me, then it can make a dynamic impact on their lives. One of the funniest incidents, you mentioned that, I had, again, when I was a teenager and I was beginning to read and beginning to get some notoriety, there were a couple of very dear friends of mine, and she was tremendously interested in my development and in my gift, and said of all the psychics she had ever known, including some very famous ones at the time, that she was more interested in my development than any of those others because she thought I outshined them. And then the gentleman that she lived with, her companion, he was skeptical but polite. And one day, finally, she talked him into doing a reading with me. And he said, I'll do the reading on the condition that I don't ask John any questions. I don't give him any feedback, and you don't tell him anything beforehand. And she said that she wouldn't, and so he agreed to the reading. So we all sit down together to do the reading. And as I begin to expand the reading and get specific and go into detail, he recoiled from the table, bug-eyed and slack-jawed, and looked at her and said, "You promised you wouldn't tell him." And she said, "I didn't. I swear to God, I did not tell him what your concerns or questions or issues were that you wanted to know about." And he looked at me and he said, "John," he said, "you know, I love you. And, you know, I believe you're a man of your word and I respect you. I'm going to ask you on your word as a man that I love and respect, did she give you any indication of what I wanted to know about or tell you anything at all before you did this reading?" And I said, "I can honestly answer that no, she did not." So he was turned into a somewhat of a believer after that point. And he told his son, who lived in California at the time, he told his son, he said, "You know, we've always been very skeptical about these things." And he said, "But I just had this reading with this guy that's our friend. And he hit the nail on the head with everything he told me. And there was no information given beforehand or anything else." Well, his son said, "Dad, you've been taken by a fraud, by a con, by a charlatan. He's just a good cold reader. He's just bumfuzzled you." He said, "When I come, I'll get a reading with him and I'll expose this guy to you." He said, "Okay." So his son came to visit a few weeks later and they introduced me. And we all sat at the table. And this is how his son introduced himself to me. He said, "I think this is all BS, and I think you're BS." And he said, "I think you're a phony and a con and a fraud, and I don't believe in any of this, and I think you've just huckstered my father and that he wasn't smart enough to catch any of this." And he said, "I'm not going to ask you any questions. I'm not going to give you any feedback. As a matter of fact," and he stood up, he said, "I'm not even going to sit here at the table with you." And he walked into the kitchen, leaned against the counter, crossed his arms, and said, "Okay, go." And I looked at him and I said, "You're the kind of client I love." And that kind of blew his hair back. So I started the reading, went through the entire reading, and it took quite a while, and finished the reading, and I looked at him, and I said, "Well," and he stared at me for a little bit, and everybody was quiet, and real slowly, he looked down at the floor, and he shook his head, and he said, "I don't know how the hell you have done what you've done here tonight, but everything you told me was accurate, was truthful, was insightful." And he said, "You hit on things in my life that are going on and accurately described them that I haven't even told my dad and his companion here about yet. My dad didn't even know these things. And yet you hit on them. And I haven't discussed this with any of my family." He said, "I don't know how the hell you've done this, but," he said, "you're the real deal. And this is the real thing." He said, "I can't explain it. I don't know how it's happened. I don't know what's happened, but," he said, "I have to sit down and apologize and tell you you're the real deal." And he sat down and shook my hand. So it is possible, yeah.
Do you believe, and this question probably will indicate to you how much thought I've given to this over the years, and that's a lot. Do you believe that you are deriving this information, if indeed you are deriving information from some cosmic source or some, I don't know, supernatural force? Or do you believe that all of us carry within us, somehow programmed, even though we don't know it, the story of our lives? Which is it, do you think?
I think it's probably a combination of both, but I think the preponderance of the information that I receive comes from the other side, comes from my spirit guides, guardian angels, so on and so forth, and possibly interaction with that person's guides and so on. So I really believe the preponderance of that information comes from the other side in a conduit of some sort to me, which then I funnel through to the client.
Okay. Now, this is a question that I've asked psychics before, and you'll have been asked it before. Is it, if you were reading for me, for example, if I was sitting there or we were doing a virtual reading, whatever we were doing, would those spirits that are around me, those maybe, you know, those people who've been important in my life or whoever, you know, I think I personally think we all have guides, but opinions on that will differ.
Sure.
Will it be my guides you tap into? Will it be those who've gone before me who might be around me that you tap into?
All of the above. All of the above, because our loved ones will come through in readings to give information. Our spirit guides will come through. Guardian angels will come through. Other energy sources that I think are just kind of a cosmic memory bank or some kind of information exchange. All of those things and probably more are evident in a reading as the mechanism by which this information comes about.
In recent weeks, probably recent months, I've had a lot of work-related issues that are supposedly in the process of resolving themselves at the moment. But it's not,
right.
not been an easy year, and certainly right. not been an easy right. few months. And during this period, and I've been telling myself that I'm deluded and I'm just seeing it and reading into it something that probably isn't there. But even half an hour before we started this conversation, I keep finding small coins. Now, whether those coins are like a shiny, almost brand new, shiny like 1 cent or one penny coin here, or a 5 pence coin, which is a little coin that is like, I don't know what that is in the U.S. And that might be a dime, I think.
Probably like a dime, yeah.
Yeah, like a little dime there. And that was the one that I found recently. But while I've been going through all of this garbage that has really taken me to the pits at times in these last weeks, I've been finding those coins. And
right.
I don't, when I, you know, when life is a little more sorted and organized, I don't find them. Now,
yes.
if you
yeah.
read the books, there are people who say, oh, well, I find feathers and I find this and I
sure.
see robins
yep.
and or I find coins. Well, I have been finding coins.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the popular signs from the other side is when you get an apport of a coin. The other side, sometimes your loved ones, sometimes your guides will produce that as a sign that, hey, we're here. We're available. We're watching over you. Reach out. Talk to us. Let us help you through the difficulties. I used to receive coins in such dramatic manners that it was unreal. As we've talked about, I'm a biker, have been since I was 15. And on a motorcycle, when you pull into a gas station to get gas, you have to be ultra careful because if a car is there that's leaked oil and you don't see it, your front tire goes into that, you're going down. Or if there's a patch of dirt or sand or whatever and you're not paying attention, front tire goes into that, good chance you're going down. So I'm always eagle-eyed when I pull into the gas station, pull up to the gas pump. I scope that out diligently before I pull the bike in. So if there's any oil or any sand or any dirt or whatever, or any kind of debris or anything unusual, a coin, a pen, a pencil, anything there, I'm going to see it as I'm pulling in. And I have pulled into a gas station, pulled up by the pump, and scoped the area out, made sure it was clean and safe before I pulled up next to the pump, not seen anything at all there, put my side stand down, turned the bike off, got off the bike, fueled the bike, prepared to get back on the bike, looked down, and there would be a coin there at my feet that appeared out of nowhere. So I've seen these things happen a lot, and that's, you know, that's one of the signs that the other side is watching over us, you know, feathers, coins, a number of things. And these are evidences that the other side is there communicating with us, manifesting things for us and saying, hey, it's real. We're here. Reach out to us. You know, and the skeptics, of course, are going to say, oh, nonsense. It was just there and you didn't see it or whatever, or it was coincidence, or they'll make up something to excuse it away. And to those people, I always say, just say what if, and don't deny it when this happens to you. If you turn around or if you take off your shoes at night, for example, this happened to me once. I took off my shoes one night, put them by the bed, got up the next morning to put them on, felt something in the shoe, and it was like, what in the world is this? Turned the shoe over upside down, and a quarter fell out of my shoe that had been manifested there overnight. So when these things happen, don't poo-poo them. Don't say, oh, it just must be coincidence. I must have done something, forgot I did it. Or don't blow it off. Don't make light of it. This is the other side giving you communication.
Well, I'm just bemused by it, I think, because it is so strange. And of course, as you know, there's this great move, and I don't like it, both sides of the Atlantic, to make us stop using coinage and notes.
I hate that.
I absolutely hate it because I don't believe any of that. I mean, this is not the subject of our conversation, but I don't believe that any of that is for our benefit. But anyway, we're moving that way. And yeah. I don't spend money. I don't spend cash money now because, you know, all the stores I go to, they want you to swipe your card. And that's what I mostly do. So I don't know where those coins could be coming from.
They're coming from the other side. That's a communication with you. And it's just like, you know, the last two times that we talked, you would get that cold spot in the room when we were talking, and I told you, I believe that's your mother coming through to visit to you. And so I believe these coins that are coming through are coming from your relatives and maybe your spirit guides, and just people wanting you to know that they're around you, that they're there, accept their energy, accept their help, reach out to them, ask for their help, ask for their guidance, and let that come through to you.
The book that we're talking about, or going to be, is 20 Ways to Increase Your Psychic Powers. Right. Doesn't that title assume that the person looking at the book has psychic powers already?
We all do, and we all have them to a degree. So we're all going to plateau. We're all going to hit a certain level that we're not going to progress beyond. But there are ways to train yourself to increase those abilities and to become better and to become more proficient. And when I wrote this book, 20 Ways to Increase Your Psychic Abilities, and by the way, that's available at Waterstones there. You can order it, the paperback, through them. It's available at the Amazon UK, mm-hmm. where you can get the Kindle download instantly. You can download it there. So it is available in the UK. The reason I wrote this book, Howard, I had clients over the years say, how can I increase my psychic abilities? How can I get better at this? How can I become more aware? How can I interact with the other side to my benefit? And how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you use a crystal ball? How do you do this? So I finally, it kind of dawned on me. It's like, look, I need to sit down and write this book. And these are things that the other side has taught me personally. I know that they work. So if a person will take these with an open mind, use them, practice them, and like anything else, it takes diligence, takes practice, takes consistency. But if you'll do it, you'll see the benefit of these tools and techniques. And I limited it to 20. I could have done 50. I could have probably done 100. But 20 is a nice round number. There's a lot in this book. The reader feedback that I've gotten is like, wow, this is like a textbook. I have to study this thing.
If somebody was getting interested in these things, they could do an awful lot worse than buy this book and look at the various subject headings. One of which is a word that if ever I went into, there's a bookshop in London that's very famous called Watkins. And it's a shop that sells books about all of these topics. And it's very close to, I used to work at Capital Radio in London, and it was just walking distance from there, very close to Covent Garden. And a word that I would always see on book covers and never really quite understood was scrying. Now, that's one of the topics in your book. What is and what benefit could it bring? What is scrying?
Scrying, very simply put, is gazing into any reflective surface to receive either psychic information or to receive literal images in that reflective surface. So when you're using a crystal ball, you're scrying. If you're doing crystal ball gazing, you can use a mirror, you can use water, you could use a puddle outside, you could use water in a bowl, you could use any reflective surface. So scrying is just basically looking into any reflective surface, and you're looking for images within that surface that give you answers to a problem, give you information, a symbol that's something you have to think about and decode. You know, say, okay, what is this? What is the meaning of this? So that's scrying in simple terms. And when I wrote this book, when I did all these things, in each chapter, I define the technique. I tell you what it is right at the start of the chapter. And then I tell you step by step how to learn that technique and practice it and get good at it, and then the real world application of it. And I took all the gobbledygook away. I took all the rigmarole and the dogma and everything away and said, okay, you want to learn this technique? This is it. cut and dried, plain and simple. Here it is. No fancy terminology. You don't have to spend a lot of money buying exotic tools and materials. You don't have to wait for certain days and hours and times to do anything. You just sit down. Here it is. Do it right now. Learn it, practice it, and use it to make your life better. So I made the book as simple as possible. Nobody has to have any prior knowledge, any special understanding, any special feeling of, well, I don't have a gift. I don't think I'm gifted that way. Then this book is for you.
I've tried at times here in my tiny little much in need of refurbishment apartment in London. I've tried to go into the tiny little bathroom here and close the door and look into the mirror in whatever light there is. And right. I've often hoped that I would see, you know, sometimes I get these feelings that something is imminent or there's something around me, okay? You know,
yeah.
Perfectly balanced, I think, and as sane as you can be for somebody who works in the media. but I've got a great big, very old sheet of mirror glass basin there. And I used to stand there and I just kind of feel, okay, if you're going to show yourself, now is a very good time to do it. I'm completely alone. It's in the dead of night. And I'm staring into this mirror and waiting to see something appear over my shoulder and expecting it to happen. And it never does.
Right.
So what, yeah. You know, what am I not doing right?
Well, for one thing, I think you have to go in with a more relaxed expectation. And I think that rather than wanting to see something behind you in the darkness, what you want to do is kind of defocus on the surface of the mirror and look into the mirror itself and look for images in the mirror. And that's what I explain in the book. When, like, if you're using a bowl of water, you're not focusing on the surface of the water. You're looking down into the water and you're looking for images in the water. Same way with using a crystal ball. You're gazing into the crystal ball. You want to look into the center of that crystal ball and look for the images there. And don't have like this eagle-eyed sharp focus. You want to kind of defocus. You want to relax your gaze. You want to relax your eyes. And you want to look into the mirror or into the crystal ball or down below the surface of the bowl of water. And you want to look into that and kind of defocus and just kind of let, okay, what's forming there? And not strain your focus, just be willing to take what comes and what you see. And it takes practice. It takes doing it regularly. If you go in, you do it one or two nights, and then you skip 2 or 3 weeks, and you go in and do it again, it's not going to be very effective. It's going to be harder to get results. If you'll take 5 or 10 minutes every day and do that every single day until you begin to get results, it works much more effectively that way. Some people are going to get results in a few days. Some people are going to get results in a few weeks. The rare few, it may take a few months. But the key is that consistency.
Right. And how can you be sure that you're not, suffering is not the word, but you're not falling to the effects of pareidolia? You know, we see all these reports about, I've got a photograph that I've just found on the NASA website. There is definitely a statue, or there's a woman kneeling down, or there's a shopping cart there on Mars. And that is often the effects of pareidolia, this thing that our minds require order. So when we look at something, we make order. How can you avoid that if you're doing this?
Well, it's very simple. You take what images come and you accept that as the effect of a communication from either your subconscious mind or from your spirit guides on the other side. And you don't try and rationalize it away. If something comes to you, it's going to have meaning and it's going to be appropriate. And it's going to be a symbol that you can interpret and that has some sense for you and some meaning for you. And so, let's take an example that if there were a defect in your mirror, and if you caught it in just the right light and it looked like a bird, but you hadn't noticed that before. And maybe you're in there, you're doing your scrying and you're relaxed, and maybe you shift your body or shift your head, nod your head over a little bit, and the light's just right, and you see this bird in the mirror. And you say, oh, well, that's interesting. And then you think, oh, my mother, my father, my best friend that crossed over, whomever that would refer to, they were a bird fanatic. They loved birds, and they used to try and get me to go bird watching with them. And, the bird, that has to be a communication from so-and-so. Well, that's meaningful. That makes sense to you. Now, if you go back in there again and the light, you turn the light on and you're shifting just right, and you say, oh, well, that's just a defect in the mirror that looks like a bird. So that must have not been a communication. That's the wrong attitude to have. If you'd never noticed it before and then all of a sudden you did and that makes sense to you in the context of communication from a family member or a loved one, then you accept that regardless of what it is. And the fact that you can see it again, that it was a defect in the mirror that you'd never noticed and that it's there now and that you'll notice it from now on, that's meaningless. That's irrelevant. The point is that it was used to make a meaningful communication to you.
Seances you talk about, and yeah. I think a lot of people have maybe the wrong idea of what a seance is, you know, because comedy programs and popular culture tend to think that it's a bunch of people sitting around a table and they say, is there any communication from Norman? One knock for yes. You know, two knocks, there's two knocks for no there.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, people think that that's what that is. But I held, when I did the last Unexplained Cruise, which was in Southern Europe, we had the medium, my friend Claire Broad, there. And she was on the stage in front of hundreds of people in the audience in the big theater on the ship. And she was literally giving impressions out to people in the audience for whom those impressions chimed. And that was right. called a seance.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, any gathering where you have people together that you're looking to communicate with someone on the other side. That's all a seance is. It's very simple, very easy. You're just trying to achieve communication with those on the other side. And if you have three, four, five people or 100 people sitting there with a psychic or medium, psychic medium, and they're giving you that information, that can be labeled as seance. In the book, I tell you how to do the old school seance. And it's very, very simple. It's very, very easy. And it's just a matter of gathering like-minded people together, a small group together, and setting the stage. And I tell you how to do that in the book. Again, very simple. Doesn't require anything complicated. And then receiving communication from the other side, from either your guides, your deceased loved ones, whomever, and then utilizing that information to make your life better. And then also to focus your energies to send energy out to help other people, like for healing and so on and so forth. So seances are very, very easy to conduct, very, very safe to conduct. You're not going to open a portal to hell. You're not going to get a demonic attachment or anything like that, any of that nonsense. All very safe and easy to do. And in the book, I tell my readers in the book, if anything frightens you or gives you the jitters, don't do it. You know, some people are scared of tarot cards. Don't buy a tarot deck and use the tarot cards. There's 20 different tools and techniques in there that you can use. So pick something you're comfortable with. If you're comfortable with all of them, use all of them. If you like three or four or five of them and don't want to experiment with the rest, that's fine. But there's nothing in there that's going to harm you.
Okay. The BBC here in the UK, and I wasn't going to watch it again. I mean, you know what it's like, a movie that you've seen four or five times, it's on, and you're tired, and you just leave it on. Last night, they were showing The Exorcist again.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And as you know, the conclusion of that movie is pretty damn scary. Do those things happen?
I have never seen anything like that. I've conducted, I can't tell you how many paranormal investigations in the course of my life. I started doing paranormal investigations when I was around 11 or 12. I'm 69 now, so that's a lot of years of interacting with the other side and conducting paranormal investigations and interacting with psychic and paranormal manifestations. And I have never encountered anything even remotely close to that. And as a matter of fact, in all the investigations I've conducted, I've never had an EVP yell at me or curse me or tell me to get out or that they were going to kill me. I've never been pushed or hit or scratched or anything like that. I don't know what these so-called ghost hunters think they're encountering, but in all the time I've done this, I've never encountered anything like that, ever.
Because
not at all.
You have a section in the book about chasing away evil attacks.
Right. Negativity. not a demonic thing. You know, I mean, there are places you go in and you say, oh man, this energy doesn't feel good to me. I don't like the energy here. And then we all get the blues. You know, we all get down in the dumps. We all get despondent. And I have a chapter on that that tells you how to protect yourself from these despondencies, from these negativities. The world can be a very negative place. And I tell you how to insulate yourself from that, to protect yourself from that, and how to keep negativity and negative vibrations away from you. But you don't have to worry about something like The Exorcist coming to get you. That's good theater. I love horror movies and I watch them, but that's all it is. It's a work of fiction. It's not reality. It's not an accurate portrayal of interaction with the other side or what really happens when people interact with the other side. It's a work of fiction.
Well, thank goodness for that is all I can say. But negativity, this world is full of negativity. I kind of think that something weird happened between 2000 and 2010, and this world changed, and this world has become divided, it's become nasty, it's become bitter, it's become accusatory. There's a lot of negativity there, and you know, my wonderful sister has been into all of these things and self-improvement and all of that stuff for longer than I have been. She used to buy the books, and I just found that the stuff that was in the books, I could do it. I could do it anyway.
Right,
she always used to get infuriated by the fact that if she bought a book on some, I don't know, she bought a book. I tell you what she did. She bought the Silver Mind Control book.
Oh yeah,
which I've got two copies of here, and you know, I find it a very, very interesting thing, and I've used it. And again, I'm talking for myself here. It works, but I'm too lazy to read all of the book. Okay, so I just skimmed it. And tried out some of the stuff, but, you know, I'd only spent an hour maybe just kind of skipping through the pages, not really interested. And I tried it out, and it worked for me. And my sister went on the courses and everything, and she had to really work at it. But what I'm saying here is that this world, I'm sorry for allowing myself to get taken down a little cul-de-sac there, but
no, that's,
you know, that was one of those things that I found, and I please... My listener, I am not recommending or advocating that. You pick and decide what works for you in life, and please don't let anybody tell you anything. But what I'm saying about this negative, awful world that we're in, how do you keep that out when the news, and I worked in news for almost all of my professional career, and it really got me down in the end. And now a lot of days I will only look at the news once during the day. But when the news is bombarding you with people hating each other, with uncertainty, with poverty, with negativity, what can you do then, assuming that's a force and that a book like yours can help you deal with that? How do you block that out and cease to be depressed by it?
Well, for one thing, you quit watching it. You turn it off and you don't watch it. You don't dwell on it. What we watch, we dwell on. What we watch becomes a part of us. And so you have to watch what you listen to, what you watch, what you take in, what you hear, the places you go, the energies that are there, so on and so forth. You have to be very careful and guard yourself in that manner. So you cut that out of your life. It doesn't mean that you don't acknowledge the reality of it. It just means that you don't allow yourself to be inundated with it. And then every day you need to take steps to sit down and to cleanse yourself and to infuse yourself with something positive and something good. That could be as simple as sitting down, closing your eyes, and listening to an album of beautiful music that you enjoy. It could be as simple as getting a drink and going out in the backyard and sitting and listening to the birds and watching the wind through the trees and so on and so forth. Positive, helpful, healthful, healing things that we can utilize that bolster us, that lift us up, that relax us, that fill us with joy. Getting together with like-minded people and using these techniques to meditate, to grow your energy, to focus on positivity, to bring that into the world and to help each other. And then again, I tell people to look at practical ways to help change the world and to help work in this. Obviously, there's physical things that we have to do, like we can write books, we can write articles, we can speak, we can ask for reforms and all of these things, and we can ask for people to become more civil, and we can give examples of that and so on and so forth. So there's physical activity that we always have to take. But behind that, we have to energize that with spiritual energy and with spiritual power to make that effective. And it really will work if we will sit down again consistently and with purpose and do that. There was a show here in the U.S. I don't know if you got it in the U.K. There was a show here in the U.S. called Psychic Detectives. Mm-hmm. And one of the people, one of the psychics, had psychically identified, had picked up on this this murderer, this killer, and was working with this detective. And she said, you know what? She sat down with some friends of hers, or it may have just been one friend. I can't remember if it was one friend or more, but she sat down with a friend. And that night she said, you know what we're going to do? We are going to focus every bit of energy that we have on this man, on this murderer, because the other realm, the God force, the universe mind, whatever you want to call it, knows where that guy is at. And we're going to send energy through the force to that man, and we're going to affect his mind, and we're going to affect his emotions, and we're going to send this message to him that you've got to walk into the police station tomorrow and surrender yourself and confess. You're going to be miserable until you do. You're going to feel sick. You're going to be frightened. You're going to be paranoid. You're going to have nightmares. You're going to feel like you can't breathe. You've got to do this. You know it's the right thing. You must go in and surrender yourself. You have to go in and surrender yourself. And she said, we sit there the entire night. We didn't get up. We didn't get a drink. We didn't eat anything. We sat there the entire night and sent that energy to this man and sent that command through the ether to this man. And she said, the detective called me in the morning and said, you'll never believe what happened. This guy walked in, surrendered, and confessed. So it is possible. But again, It takes banding together, utilizing that energy, being consistent, being forceful, being willing to spend the time. And those are some of the things that we can do to send that positive energy out into the world to make it better.
Well, that's the power of collective, and I've always believed in that. I think we see demonstrations of that all the time, the power of collective energy, a bunch of people Absolutely. Thinking the same thing can make great change.
And Absolutely.
I personally believe that the direction of travel in all things is good, but we sometimes have to go through an awful lot of bad and a lot of people have to suffer before we get there. However, if it was such a potent and powerful force, how come we haven't used it to positively give us the truth as to who pulled the trigger on John Fitzgerald Kennedy? How many people, and you know, who were they? If you believe that there was more, as I do, that there was more than just Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone, or for example, I talked recently on my television show about the killing of a TV newscaster in the United Kingdom. I don't know whether it made news in the US. A woman called Jill Dando, who was shot through the head on her doorstep, and one man was wrongly convicted of it and later released from prison. So, as we speak, it is still unknown who did this. Now, a lot of people have been focusing. Certainly, there's been a television documentary series in the last couple of weeks about the case. A lot of people would have been focusing on that person needs to be outed and found. But it doesn't happen. And similarly, look down the decades, and again on November 22nd or 23rd this year, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're on, it will be, I think, is it the 70th anniversary of the killing? No, the 60th anniversary of the killing of JFK.
Right.
Lots of people will be thinking about that then. But it's unlikely that the truth will emerge then. So it's
not
always powerful, is it?
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, with Kennedy, I've seen a couple of documentaries lately where they've pretty much been able to tie the Kennedy assassination back to the mob. And one of the things that was brought out that I was not aware of, that a lot of people were not aware of, was that the elder Kennedy went to the mob in a certain state and said, we need this state to swing for my son, and I need this favor from you. Well, you don't do a favor for the mob without getting, you know, giving a favor in return. And so apparently the mob said, fine, we'll swing the state, but you're beholden to us. They swung the state. Kennedy won, and then basically the elder Kennedy was like, who are you? You know, forget you. I'm done with you. I wash my hands of you. And the mob said, oh, no, you don't. And there was fairly credible evidence that a noted mobster on his deathbed made the deathbed confession, though, yeah, we did it. We took Kennedy out because of that.
Of course, there are other theories, and no doubt we'll be discussing my show on that big anniversary. But you know what I'm saying, that if the power of collective energy was so great, then I would have hoped it would be able to solve our greatest mysteries.
But, you know, the problem is, I think one thing that people have to realize, like you look at a person like me that's a psychic, and people think that, well, you should be able to know everything and do everything and all that, and that's not possible. We're not God. And I think various psychics have various gifts and talents and abilities that are stronger in areas than they are in others. So you also encounter that. Another thing is, it goes back to the consistency. How many people are willing to get together every night at the same time at somebody's house, sit down, put that collective energy out there, and try and discover who did that? How many people are willing to do that? No, there's something on the telly I got to watch. I don't feel good tonight. I'm tired. I'm staying home. Oh, I promised friends I'd meet them for a drink. So it takes that self-discipline, that self-control, to dedicate yourself to doing that. And then also, there is the resistance from the powers that be to accepting any type of information like that. One example, and I give this in the book, one example is that I had here in America, we had the LA freeway shootings many decades ago, and they couldn't figure out how these people were getting onto the freeway, shooting at people, and getting away scot-free. And I had this vision, and I saw how they were doing it. So, like an idiot, I called the LA Police Department. And I said, I know you get calls from every kind of crazy there is, but I'm a psychic and I have a vision of how they're doing this. And I can tell you how to do this, how to intercept it, how to stop it, and how to solve this thing. Okay, great. Let me put you through to the right department. Okay. So they connect me with somebody else. I tell them, oh, that's great, but I'm the wrong guy. I've got to put you through this one more thing. So they put me to another person, and in the background, you can hear everybody that I've already talked to in the background laughing uproariously.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because we keep hearing both sides of the Atlantic that police often use psychics, but they don't talk about it.
Yeah. So in this case, I was a laughing stock, and I was like, okay, I hung up the phone. So you have that resistance to it.
And very importantly, you say that you had a vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can only have your word for this, but were you vindicated?
I quit following it after that. I just was disgusted and quit following the news story.
So you don't know whether the vision you had was correct?
I feel 100% it was. I don't have anything out there in the news stories to point to that says it was. It was an interesting thing that you're talking about police departments using psychics and not liking to say that they do. There are some that use that. There was production company behind Psychic Detectives called me one time and asked me if I had worked with law enforcement agencies, and I said no, and they said, would you be willing to? I said, sure. And I began to talk to him, began to ask him some questions. And I said, you know, I watched the show. And I said, you've got some really amazing people on there that really have a skill and really have a talent in that area. You know, why don't you keep using those? And I recounted a couple of the episodes I'd seen, some of the psychics I'd used, some of the specific things that they had told detectives, the police, that turned out to be true and were accurate and were verifiable. And I said, you know, why don't they keep using these same people? And she said, well, it's kind of a difficult process. She said, it's difficult in the first place to get law enforcement to agree to work with psychics because of the stigma. And she said, in the second place, to address your issue of, well, God, it works, why don't you keep using this? She said, a lot of police departments, the people feel like they're bringing in an outsider that's doing the job better than they can do it, and it puts them in a bad light, and it smashes their ego, and so they don't want to keep these psychics around. They don't want to keep working with them because it makes them feel bad, puts them in a bad light, and affects their ego. So that goes back to the powers that be not being receptive to these things. So it's not as easy as people think. It's a big hurdle to overcome. There's a lot of work that has to go in. And then once you bring forth that work, you have somebody that's willing and receptive and able to follow through on it. There was another incident that I had where I was called by the FBI. And this guy told me he was an FBI agent. And I said, well, I'm not going to believe you until I get a number, or you tell me what city you're in. I'm going to call the FBI office there and ask for you. And I said, if you are an agent, I'll talk to you. If you're not, you're scamming, you're pretending to be somebody. I said, I'm going to bring the wrath of God down on you. He laughed and he said, that's great. And so I called the office, asked for him. Sure enough, he was a legitimate agent and he was there. So they had a case they wanted me to work on. So, and working on this case, I got a vision of a specific highway marker, the road number of that highway, and down the road where there was this turnoff where they would find some evidence. And so I gave that to him, among several other things. And then he also wanted a personal reading. So he called me back.
Interesting. For the
personal, yeah, and we got together for the personal reading, and I asked him, I said, did you discover, if was there such a road marker with those numbers, is there such a highway there? And he said, yes, there was. I said, awesome. Did you go down there and look for that turnoff, go into that area that I told you about to look for this certain evidence or whatever? No. It's like, well, why? I gave you the evidence that was validated.
It sounds to me like he'd heard about you and he was using that as a way to get you to do a personal reading for him.
Yeah, I don't know. So it was very frustrating. So there's a lot of frustration there in trying to deal with law enforcement, trying to get these things through and trying to deal with people in authority and trying to get them to not only to just accept the possibility of it, but then when it happens, to follow through and to do something with it. Mm-hmm. I had another case where people had a family member murdered, and they called me and they said, can you tune in on this and tell us what you see. And I gave them the description of the person that died, the description of where they died, how they died. The person that I thought was the murderer gave them that description. And they said, God, everything you're telling us is exactly as it was and who we think it is. And the description of the person you gave us as the suspect is exactly the person that we suspect, matches their description exactly. The murder occurred where you said it did and how it said it did, and so on and so forth. They said, we've got the FBI working on this. Would you call the FBI agent, talk to him, give him this information? And I said, well, I've attempted this before and it's gone nowhere. I'm pretty sure it's going to be disappointing this time too, but I will. And so I called the agent and got his voicemail, gave him the information, gave him my number, and asked him to call me back. Never heard from him. So it's a very frustrating process. You know, people always think, oh, well, if this works, it should be so cut and dried and so easy. Well, for all the reasons I've given you, it's not. It's a very difficult and very complex process.
Okay. To lighter things, then, the book also talks about attracting the perfect mate.
Right.
Using your psychic powers. How on earth would you safely do that?
Well, it's a process. I give people a three-list technique. And you're going to make three lists, and I tell you in detail how to do this in the book and then what to do with these lists once you've completed them and how they work and why they work and how to make that happen for you so you attract the right person into your life. But there's also a lot of caveats there. I've had clients come to me that say, you know, I'm lonely and I really want to find somebody. And it comes out in the reading that they work 18 hours a day or 12 hours a day, and then they have very little time for somebody left over. They want to do other things once they're off work, and they don't really have time for a person. They don't have time to develop a relationship. A relationship takes time and work and effort. You're dealing with the emotions and the thoughts and the lives of another human being. And if you want to mesh that together, that takes time. So a lot of people just don't have time. They want the relationship, but they don't have time for a relationship. And so if you don't, you have to restructure your life where you make time for the relationship.
Okay, well, that's psychology, not psychic, though.
Right.
Isn't it?
It is. It is. It's good psychology. It's good. And I address that in the book as, you know, there are some things you have to look at in a practical way about, you know, the relationship. Do I have time for the relationship? Am I the type of person that wants to commit and settle down to just one person? Or do I like to flirt around? Do I like to date a lot? Really deep in your heart of hearts, as you examine yourself to use this technique, be honest with yourself and say, do I really want somebody there when I get off work? Or do I look forward to coming in, sitting down with a cat, pouring a drink and watching TV? So for these techniques to work in a psychic manner, a paranormal manner, first you have to examine yourself, be honest with yourself, and see where this is going. And then if you can answer truthfully that, yeah, I'm ready for a relationship, I've got time for a relationship, I really do want a relationship, okay, here's the tools and techniques then to allow that to happen in your life, to make that happen in your life.
All right. And the tools and techniques, there are people that I know who do witchcraft and they do particular rituals.
Right.
I'm guessing that's not where you're coming from.
This particular technique isn't a ritual type thing like that. It's more of a working with your subconscious and changing the energy in and around yourself and the type of energy and the type of person you attract, and building this up to a degree that you begin to send this energy out into the world. And that matches, finds that person, pulls you together. And it is a mystical thing, but it's not the bell, book, and candle type thing. It's not that type of exercise.
No, I mean, in my limited experience of these things, John, it's like a lightning strike, and it's very special on those rare occasions when it does happen. So I'm guessing that what you're talking about more is kind of, not kind of kicking the door down with a ritual, but doing things that will help that door to open.
Exactly. Okay. And, you know, again, you can work the magic, but you have to be receptive to the magic when it comes. And if you're not paying attention to it, if you're not receptive to it, if you've fallen into the trap of, I really fall for this particular type of person. Every time I do that, they disappoint me. I know it's not the right person to be in a relationship with, but I really find it attractive and exciting. Then if you start working on these tools and techniques to attract the right person, and the right person is coming towards you through the universe, they're coming, they're going to be there, but then you hit one of these people that you're always attracted to, and you go off course with that person again, you've thrown your good work away. So that's why I say you really have to know yourself, and you have to say, okay, am I willing to sit down and really put in the effort to attracting the right person and waiting on that right person, recognizing that right person when they come, and accepting that person?
Okay, so there is a psychic element to it, and it's not all physiology and psychology.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, work in progress, I guess, then, for most of the world.
Yes.
EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, you talk about that in the book. Now, I've got to say, in my experience of doing this show, which is nearly 20 years now, one way and another, in various places, I've had a lot of people demonstrate what they believe are really convincing electronic voice phenomena recordings. And they played them. And they've said, you can see, can't you, he's saying bamboo, or he's saying, orangutan, or something like that.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, you listen to it three times, and then, yes, you do hear it, because you're conditioned to hearing it. And one or two over the years have been spectacularly clear.
Yes.
So are there ways that we can, if we want to go out and do that, and just to prime people listening to this, I don't think that anybody listening to this won't know, but in case you don't, those people who do EVPs, they take a recorder typically into a place that they believe the spirits may align and may converge, and they ask questions typically, or they just do a recording. Then they take the recording home, play it back in the silence, and they'll hear things there that they didn't hear at the time. That's it, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Yeah, the mysterious thing about electronic voice phenomenon, EVP, is that we get these voices speaking to us through this static and through this noise, and we don't hear them with our physical ears at the time of the recording. We only hear it when we play the recording back, because they have used that ambient noise, or the inherent noise in the recorder, or the static from a radio or whatever, like ghost boxes, scan radio frequencies and use that static for the voices to speak through. They've used that to speak to us, and we don't usually hear that at the time, only during playback, which is one of the mysteries of EVP. There are, and I've recorded credible EVP that I wouldn't have to tell you what the voice is saying. I wouldn't have to tell you, listen and you'll hear a voice. I have several Class A voices that are so clear that if I sit down and just played them for you, you would hear the voice and go, well, why did that person only say this one word or this phrase or whatever? Who was that? That's how clear the voice is. You would be able to hear not only the voice, you would be able to distinguish it. You would be able to clearly understand what they said. So there is plenty of evidence for this to happen. The frustrating thing, and it's very simple to do, and I explain step by step in the book how to do it and how to get results. The frustrating thing about all of this is that I talked to a guy, I was on being interviewed on a podcast where one of the hosts was a professional musician. And in addition to that, he was also an expert in software, computer software. And he said, you know, John, he said, I can take anything that's sound, a noise, a burp, a song, a note from a guitar, a symphony, speech, anything that's a sound, I can put it into the software. I can analyze it. I can manipulate it. I can do anything I want to with it. I can discern what frequency it's on, so on and so on and so forth. But he said, when I put these EVP voices into the software, I can find them. I can hear them. I can analyze them. I cannot determine what frequency they're using to speak. He said, I can determine the frequency of anything else out there, any other sound out there, but I can't find the frequency that these voices are using. And I told him, and we agreed on this, I said, you know, when we do finally make that breakthrough and discover the frequency that these voices are using to communicate, then we're going to start having real-time communication, two-way communication with the other side. That's a really exciting possibility.
Isn't that what the so-called Soul Phone project is doing?
You know, I read about the Soul Phone. I don't think anything ever came about with that. The last that I saw, they were still wanting funding and still, not really moving forward. So I don't think anything ever came about with the Soul Phone. That's what they were attempting to do, but I don't think anything ever really came about with that.
Okay, well, listen, I've enjoyed this conversation as ever, John. We can easily do an hour just, wrapping, can't we, really? Just one, to end it all, one topic from the book, then, that I haven't mentioned that you maybe think that I should.
Psychometry.
Okay.
That's the chapter that starts the book, and psychometry, to me, is one of the easiest techniques to teach and one of the easiest and most demonstrable techniques to learn. And I started off the book with that because for that reason, it is so easy. I've taught psychometry to several people successfully, people that didn't think they had any psychic ability or could do anything at all, and they were shocked and astonished when they would achieve 85-90% accuracy on the things that they received from doing psychometry.
Right. Just to explain to people who don't know, and I'm sure people listening to this do, psychometry is where you're given an object belonging to somebody, and right. You are able to hold it, and you know things. You know things from it.
You get vibrations, get information, get images and so on and so forth from that object. And one of the best experiences I had, there's a guy I know that's a scientist and a big, huge skeptic, like an evil, aggressive, Amazing Randy type skeptic. And I talked him into doing psychometry, and we live in different states. So I said, I'm going to send you a picture of an object, and I want you to look at this object. And without censoring yourself or second-guessing yourself or saying, oh, I'm just imagining things, put all that out of your head and just whatever comes into your mind write that down. So I sent him a picture of an object that is, I've owned for decades, has a very rich history and background. And he sent me back and said, okay, well, don't think there's anything to it, but here's what I've got. He was almost 100% accurate in all the things he perceived just from viewing the picture of this object and sending that back to me. So it blew his mind. And so psychometry is a very, very easy method to learn. That starts off the book, and then you can go on from there. Like I say, there's 20 different tools and techniques in the book, all of them easy to learn, all of them easy to use. Again, consistency and practice is the key.
Interesting. I wish you well with the book, John. I'm sure you don't need my good wishes, because I'm sure it'll be flying off the digital shelves.
It's selling very well. Here in the U.S., it's at the Barnes & Noble Top 100 best-selling books.
Wow.
Yeah, it's done very well on Amazon. Debuted number one.
Boy.
Bestseller in three categories there when it came out. So it's doing very well.
Yeah, you don't need my help. And I think I misnamed it at the beginning. I think I used the word powers. The title is 20 Ways to Increase Your Psychic Ability.
Correct, yeah.
And if I'd use the word powers, would I be wrong? Are they powers?
I don't think you'd be wrong. I think they are powers. I think you can say that. But most people look at it as learning something, an ability, like an ability to draw or an ability to learn mechanicking or something like that. So I kind of wanted to couch it in that language to tell people this is an ability that you can, that you already have, that you can increase, that you can develop.
I think personally, and again, this is only my view, other opinions are available. I think everybody has it, but
absolutely,
they open the door to it in varying degrees. It's like people who say to me, I don't believe in ghosts. Mind you, there was that time when I was on holiday in Blackpool.
Exactly.
That's always
exactly
the way. Oh, John, listen, lovely to speak with you again. You're sounding in great form, and I'm sure we'll talk again. Thank you.
Outstanding. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you. More great guests in the pipeline here at the Home of the Unexplained. So until we meet again, my name is Howard Hughes in the sunshine. That's not my full name. I'm saying that I'm in the sunshine. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm. And whatever you do, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.